We've been on a little bit of hiatus. Life has been happening, but we're back for another episode. And sometimes you have to set off the alarms, put off the bat signal. And I texted you and I was like, Jen, we have to record because Jennifer and I watched Dune together and the Oscars are this weekend. And so it was the perfect time. It was the right time. It was the necessary time. Jennifer, how are you?
That was so dramatic, but thank you.
It's because I sent you my obsession with the episode, which we'll get into later, and so it's making me really dramatic.
it has been a while. I was like, the Oscars are this weekend, and I think like you were like, oh shit. So, we are back with our two favorite topics to talk about, right?
Yes, absolutely. So I feel like it's also been a while since you and I watched the movie together, and we went with our good friend Russell, and you got the I feel like was this the first time you watched a movie with him? Because you got the full experience, and I feel like you weren't ready for it.
You know what? I think you're right. I think
Because
it
I'm
was
used
my.
to it. I've watched many a movie with him,
It
and so
was so much fun because the jump scares that were happening on screen was nothing compared to the jump scares that I was getting from his sporadic, oh shit. Every
It's
once in a
he.
while,
I
I'm just
love
screaming,
watching
oh
movies with him.
shit.
I love watching movies with him. We watched Dune 2, and so that's what we'll be talking about. We'll be talking about Dune 2, our thoughts, and then the Oscars for this weekend. A lot of props for the betting markets and Jennifer's prediction. So we'll start with Dune 2. Okay. I want to start with Chalamet because I feel like that was your biggest takeaway. When we've been texting and stuff, I feel like that's kind of where you squarely were like focused on. What did you think of Chalamet in this?
Yeah, so I'm a Timothée Chalamet fan because I've seen a lot of the stuff that he's been in. Like I really, obviously he's an Oscar nominated actor. Call Me by Your Name is so good. He's so good in it. I loved him in Little Women. I have yet to watch Willy Wonka, but I think that's okay. I will eventually get there. I watched Dune 1 or Part 1. Is it called Part 1?
No, it's just called Dune.
Dune, at home. So I
Wait,
which I think
what?
was that not the experience for most people? Wasn't that like part of like the Warner Brother like experiment of re releasing like
Yeah, it
movies on?
was.
So yeah, I didn't watch it in theaters, and so I think I just didn't get the full effect of. I actually really liked Dune, so
Yeah, the movie's
kudos to
great.
that. Like even though I watched it at home, like I still had a really good watching experience, but I just did not expect him to carry a movie in this way, especially because like your typical blockbuster huge movie, unless you're like Barbenheimer, is like action related, and you just expect like a guy who's like bigger in every sense of the word, and I just am so much more used to him carrying out quieter parts. And even Dune, I would say that like it's not, I mean, he's doing a lot of things, but like there's a quiet power to like what he's doing. And then in this movie, I was just like, oh, seeing your face like 7 feet tall on this like gigantic screen and like how you're emoting and obviously, like the way that I was feeling about him was also related to like how he was playing off of like Zendaya, how he was playing off of
Yeah.
Javier Bardem and Josh Brolin. So like it's the entire cast, but I was just like, oh yeah, he's a star. Like I get it. I totally get it. And now I'm on the Timothée Chalamet like train.
I feel like I was on that train pretty early. I feel like I've talked about him a lot, so this feels very vindicating for me. So, yeah, I love it. I thought he was great in it too. I think his performance was. Have you heard the quote that he gave where, like he spoke with like Leonardo DiCaprio, and the one piece of advice he gave him was like, don't do superhero movies. Have you seen
that? Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to transition from talking about Chalamet, but I want to use this quote to talk about it, to transition here. But it's like, this doesn't feel like a superhero movie, even though it very clearly is part of like a franchise and is like a big action blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
And I want, because I want to transition from Chalamet's kind of performance to Denis Villeneuve's like directing. Dude, like, he's so good. Like, the directing is so good in this, and it felt like I was watching a master of their craft, but they were clearly working on like a passion project, and it just happened to be like a blockbuster franchise potential. And I mean this is all tongue in cheek is not the right turn of phrase, but they're doing it with class when they're like, oh, like, if people, they're not being very explicit that, oh yeah, this is a trilogy, or yeah, that this is like a universe that we're gonna, there's a video game, like literally I think 2 days after it came out I saw a trailer for the video game, you know. And they're probably gonna do like TV shows and stuff. I think there actually might be already a TV show about like the Bene Gesserit or whatever.
Interesting. Uh-huh.
And it's like, but they're being all like, oh yeah, like if, you know, the second one makes money, then, you know, maybe we'll do a third one, you know? And so I like roll my eyes a little bit, but I also like kind of appreciate it. Yeah, it's like, it'd be like if Scorsese decided to make like, if he was like really passionate about, you know, Thor, you know, it's just, it's so funny that we get to have this and enjoy this. Mm-hmm. And it's so great. It's so great. Mm-hmm. Like, there are still images. Jen, do you have any of these where it's like, I still have images that are like burned into my mind in a good way? Like when they're in arena, like the black and white.
Yeah.
Or like anytime people got up out of the sand. You know, yes. Where they're like hidden in sand, they just got, like, do you have any of those? Like,
I do. I do. I have Austin Butler's face seared into my brain, and it's terrifying. There's so many visuals in this movie, including, like, you know, I know everybody was like making fun of like the Dune popcorn bucket, but like the sandworm, or like the way that the sand looks and the way that the desert looks, like, it made me feel like the first time I watched Mad Max. What is Fury Road?
Fury Road.
In the screen, like, you felt like you were in the desert, and you felt parched, and you felt like everything. And I'm a huge like Denis Villeneuve fan. Like, one of my favorite movies is Arrival, and he's done like Sicario. Like, the man, I'm just like, give him all the money. And I think from that perspective, like, even though this world is so, like, it's not an easy world, right? Like, you do have to, like, get placed into this, like, gigantic, epic, like, world that the author has created, and it's not the easiest. I mean, to me, it's a little bit like in Lord of the Rings, where there's so much going on, and there's just different multitudes of, like, layers to everybody and like the tribes and all this stuff. But like, but then to translate that into like a visual language that like is consistent and makes sense. Like, I'm like, kudos to everybody who was part of this. Kudos to him for directing. And I honestly, if this movie had come out in November as it was supposed to, I think we would be having this discussion. Like, I think we would be talking about June in the second part of the conversation we're about to have. So it is interesting to me what it's going to do to hold on to that momentum for like next year's, like, you know, award conversations. But even if that doesn't happen, like, I don't think there's anything being released this year that will be as cinematically as a, like, I don't know that it's gonna ever reach the like Barbie Oppenheimer numbers, but I would imagine that it'll get pretty close. So honestly, I do think people should watch it. And like, I didn't read the book because I just didn't feel like it. But if you've watched the first one, like even with the basic understanding of what's going on, like it's so visually stunning, and it's so like the acting is great. Like everything about it is so good. And like, you know, I hate when movies are like, like every movie right now, but like when movies are more than 2 hours, but it really does go by, you know, fast.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You
know, well, actually I'll say this. The first 2 hours flew. And mm-hmm. we'll talk about this later when we talk about like when I talk about what I didn't love about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely felt at some point it come to like not a screeching halt, but there was definitely a difference between the first like 2:15 and the last like 15 to like 30 minutes, at least in
mm-hmm.
my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just read you what is it? Denny's like last, mm-hmm. let's say his like filmography.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't watch either of his first two movies, but I've definitely heard of him. Prisoners, that's the one with Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Paul Dano's in it. Enemy. Enemy, that's also starring I think Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal is in it. I didn't watch either of those, but his last five movies were Sicario,
mm-hmm.
Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, Dune, mm-hmm. Dune Part Two. That is wild. Absolutely wild. I didn't watch Blade Runner 2049, but let me tell you something. I am now. I'm going to watch that.
I think he has such a visual language for every single movie.
Yes, that is the perfect way to describe it. Because I've heard that used before, but yeah. it really hits home. It really resonates with his directing. You know who? Do you have anything else about Villeneuve before I move on to some of the performances I really liked?
No, let's talk about performances.
Yeah. I really like Rebecca Ferguson.
Mhm. She has a really hard role, don't you think?
I do, especially when you think about Dune, the first one.
Mhm.
You know, it's like going from like a mom who's like scared for and loves her son to someone who's slowly turning like psychotic.
Like unhinged.
Psychotic, like a religious figure. But able to still, like, there are still moments where she seems like a normal person underneath that, you know, like she clearly does actually love her son. And some of the conversations she has with like Chani about Paul towards the end, like kind of snapped me back where I was like, wait, mm-hmm. oh, this is so bizarre. You know, Javier Bardem, I feel like my X feed and my Instagram feed is just Stilgar memes,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, you know, it's like changing the TV source from HDMI 1 to HDMI 2. And it's like, it must be the Lisan al-Ghaib, you know, just like stuff like that. It's so good. And I think what's great about Javier Bardem's performance is like we were all kind of like laughing in the theater. And then, like, as the movie goes on, it becomes less and less funny. And it's, like, it's just kind of scary. Like, the finale. Yeah. Like, you know, what I noticed was, like, you know, in the beginning, it's like, oh, yeah, like, don't throw up. Like, he goes to Rebecca Ferguson's character, like, don't throw up. That's, like, a waste of water, you know? And we have to, like, drain all these dead bodies of all the water they have. And then by the end of the movie, they're just burning people alive, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, now this is like and I don't think the original writer was like hiding the comparisons to like, you know, Islam, but like now we're going on a jihad and it's like, yo, this is crazy. It felt, the arcs of some of the supporting characters I found just as fascinating as like, you know, Paul Atreides' arc. You know,
1,000%, because everybody has such clear motivations and agendas and to see it all kind of come to head. So parts of it like just made me feel like, oh, like this is like what's happening now, you know, like with our like just like human nature, but also like, you know, like there's like a season, like we're heading into elections and a political season and people kind of hedging all their bets and placing their faith in like one person or politicians or like whatever. And like, it was just, I completely agree with you. Like, I actually, like, I think the casting, and I think, I don't know if we talked about this, but I don't know if it's starting next year or the year after, but best casting is going to be a category in the Oscars. Not to relate everything back to the Oscars.
No, it's
literally every single person in this movie is like A++ with either the little that they're given to do or the crazy thing that they're given to do, or even like
Christopher Walken is in this.
Yes, he is. And
I was not expecting that. I'm sure I saw it in a trailer, but it still like caught me off guard. I was like, wait. I was like, Walken's in this? Like, what?
Yeah. Like, people you don't expect. I mean, we have a cameo towards the end of the movie that I think people largely enjoyed. And so I think there's a really good blend of, like, new Hollywood and, like, up-and-coming, like, literal movie stars, you know? Along with, like the people who have been doing this for so long and like are like the old representatives of like the old Hollywood. I did miss Oscar Isaac, you know. But that's because, you know, he's beautiful and I would have liked to have seen him, but obviously he has no place in this adaptation. But
he's dead.
Spoiler alert, but yes.
Oh yeah, spoiler for Dune 1. And also, I mean, obviously spoiler alert for Dune 2. We're not holding anything back.
Yeah. So I don't know. Let's move on to then maybe like what you didn't like, because I'm curious to know.
I have a few more things that like I loved about.
Oh, you do? Okay.
just two more things. One really quick is Zendaya. I'm always like, I don't know why. At this point, I shouldn't. You know, no. I guess it speaks to her talent. It's like I always have high expectations of her, and she always like still manages to like surpass them, and I don't know
I'm a huge Zendaya fan. Have you seen Euphoria?
Oh no, I get nervous about that show.
It is trash, honestly. It's trash in so many ways, and the reason why I've watched every single episode is because of her. She is so good in that, and I just think she's just so good in everything she does, and she seems like a person who has her head on straight. Like she's not taking like some of the other roads that like a typical Disney child actor can be and have gotten into. And I don't know, like I just like her so much as an actress, but also as a celebrity. And you're totally right. Like I think she is like marvelous in this. And it's I mean, like the Chani Paul like storyline can become like, you know, it can veer on this like almost corniness because it's young adult love, right? But they like imbue it with such like you remember what it was like to like, you know, have like puppy love and like all this stuff, and like I think they do it in a way that like feels so natural, and it's probably like their friendship and like all this stuff, but like I completely agree. And I think it does say a lot that, like, in the marketing for Dune 1, even though she was barely in it, they literally used her to promote and market the movie. And so she's literally, like, selling movies and able to sell movies, you know? So I hope that this means, like, bigger and better things for her. I'm curious about your thoughts on Florence Pugh and Austin Butler.
Okay. Florence Pugh, I literally have no thoughts. Like, she was fine in that role. Let's save Austin Butler for, like, a hot second. Because the last thing I loved, and I'm curious to know your thoughts. I'm, like, really glad this wasn't a TV show. And what I mean by that is this was, like, very clearly a movie, like, a visual medium, you know? But I also like that I didn't need to see every detail. I'll give you an example. What I was really expecting, there's a part of the movie. Do you remember the part of the movie where, like, he's trying to prove himself? Paul Atreides is trying to prove himself. And so they're like, okay, you have to go to that end of the desert and come back and, like, be careful of the whispers, right? And I'm like, oh man, so we're about to spend 15 minutes, 20 minutes doing that. And I was like, nope. He came back and now we're on to the next thing. And I was like, oh, that's, like, interesting. And my TV brain, like my binging, like, Disney Plus or Netflix stuff, that part of my brain was like, oh yeah, we have to see every single thing. And it's like, but I feel like I was almost like respected as a viewer, being like, you know, like you can use your imagination here. He's back. He did it. And you can use your imagination as to how hard and how weird and how scary that was. What are your thoughts on that? Because that's one of the big takeaways actually that I had, like, walking out of the theater.
That he was able to make it so I don't know, is realistic the word I'm trying to
No,
use?
it was just it was very clear that it was like, I'm making a movie. I'm not just, like, while being faithful to the source material, I'm not gonna show you every single thing just because it was in the book. I'm like, I don't need to, and you get it, because
Yeah, I
I felt like
think
I got
that's
it.
the yeah, I think that's the difference between really, really talented directors and actors versus like not like also honestly though, like Steve, if they were to have done that though, the movies would be like 7 hours long, like 17 hours
Yeah.
long, just 'cause like of the source material. But I think there is an art to what are the like what works for an adaptation, like a visual adaptation. And what can we either pull out or lean into or the opposite, like lean out of, for something like this to work? Because again, I think it's so like insane to me that not everybody is a sci-fi like fantasy nerd and like, but this the rapture around Dune 1, 2, like the movies, like it transcends that. You know, this isn't like a Mission Impossible, not to like knock Mission Impossible or anything like that, but like you can't just be dropped into this world. Like you there is a fair amount of like thinking and investing into this world that you have to sort of do. And so yeah, I mean I think like I just I don't know. I was really, really into it.
Yeah.
And I can't say that like I was like super, super like I don't know.
Oh,
I
interesting.
don't think I had expect like that high. Like I think I was excited for it, but I did not think that like I would leave that theater and like think about it for days, which I know you and Russ have been doing because we text. It's been a week and we're still texting about it, you know?
So good. Okay, let's talk about Austin Butler, because that was one of the things I'm gonna say I didn't love
Okay.
about the movie.
Do you not like him?
I have no thought, because I didn't watch, like, Elvis or
Okay.
whatever, you know. I kind of thought he was fine, but then what really threw me off was at one point I, like, thought about it and I was like, wait, is he just doing Skarsgård's voice? And then I was like, oh, maybe it's because they're, like, related or whatever. I was like, wait. But Dave Bautista isn't doing that voice, and they're supposed to be brothers.
That's no, they're cousins.
Are they cousins?
Yeah, they're cousins.
Oh yeah. So I was just, like, kind of, like, confused at
Who,
that
by the
point.
way, Dave Bautista, we talked about this, right? But I'm
So
like,
good.
out of all of the wrestlers, he'll be the
So
first
good.
one to like,
Oh
you
my
know,
God. So
win an
good.
Oscar someday. I think that's what Austin Butler does.
Wait,
He
what does that mean?
turns into the character, whether that's a real character or like a fictional character. But like he manipulates his voice, he manipulates like
Why is he doing
just I
Skarsgård's voice?
but I think that's a choice that he made because they are related.
Oh, that's interesting. So
Yeah,
yeah,
but I feel like there's
did
been
go there.
discourse online about this, no?
About what?
About why he's or like you're it's not, it's an observation that people have made, and I haven't really read it, but the next time it comes up on like whatever, I'll send it to you.
But what I love about his performance though is like, you know, at the end when they're having the duel,
mm-hmm.
and Timothy Chalamet goes may thy blade chip and shatter, and he has this like this insane look that's like half when he says it back to him, half mm-hmm. mocking, but mm-hmm. half like, okay, like I see you. Mm-hmm. There's like little stuff like that. He's clearly talented. Like I don't mm-hmm. I'm not saying he sucks or whatever. I just found the voice a little distracting.
Yeah.
He's clearly able to convey like multiple emotions, even for someone who's like whose character is like a sociopath, you know?
Yeah. I think the he's like a true classic villain, and so sometimes those are, I think, easy roles, and then sometimes they're harder to play. But like with his character, like to be honest, like I was like, I understand your role in all of this, but like you're not the best villain, because I don't actually know why you're psychotic or like why you're a sociopath. And it just doesn't, it just, it like, not him, because I thought he did a good job. I think his character
right.
is quite one-dimensional compared to, like, everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, I think it's hard to be like, oh, like, he was so great. Like, he was good, but, like.
He was fine.
I don't think there's a lot more. But then, you know, I mean, I appreciate you. Like catching that moment, and like again, I think it speaks to how good he was. But like, yeah, like I think like that character is it's a true classic crazy villain.
Yeah. You know, I know we both love Chalamet, but you know what I didn't love? Like when he yells.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It, like you said something before about like the quiet parts.
Mm-hmm.
Like the. When he's like quiet, I remember now. It was when you were comparing it to the quiet roles he's had in the past, right? Mm-hmm.
Although literally, I have not watched Willy Wonka, so I do not know what that's about.
Sure, but when he's like just talking, mm-hmm. it's great. The parts where he starts like yelling, I was like, oh, that. I mean, that's okay, you know.
Did it not capture you because like? I think the character arc of Paul is that he goes from like, you know, like a teenage
once he drinks the
emo boy
mm-hmm. vomit.
Yes, and then but then like slowly comes into this this role of the Messiah or whatever, and he needs to sell you on that. So if you don't think that like when he becomes that, like when he dials up, like his. Not, I don't want to say performance, like when the character gets dialed up because like he now is like fully on board and like is owning what has been thrust onto him, I guess, his responsibilities or whatever. It has to be believable or it and like. Yeah, I guess I'm asking you, like, if you didn't really think that he was selling that, then like, does it work?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's more, I think, I believe that it actually plays to his benefit that it doesn't super work, because mm-hmm. I think that's the part of, like, religious fanaticism that, like, if you're in it and you're already, like, sold on it, it doesn't take a lot to get you. But as, like, outside observers, you're like, what? This is the guy that, like, this is your king?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I actually think it plays both ways in that respect, you know, where it's like it's just believable enough where you could see why someone who's like so bought in already is like falling for it. But mm-hmm. at the same time, like under a microscope, you're like, hey, this guy's just like yelling. This mm-hmm. is, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Not, mm-hmm.
The only part that he yelled that I was like, oh, that's pretty cool is when he's explaining why he's not fighting Stilgar. Mm-hmm. And he's like, why would I like shatter my knife before battle, and I was like, oh, that's a good, I'm gonna steal that, I'm gonna say that, even though that line's probably in literature for like, you know, at this
what
point,
in
like,
what case in what situation would
I don't
be
know
using this?
I don't know, I'm just keeping that in my back pocket.
But can I just say also, like, I mean, I don't know what language they use. Like, I don't know if it's completely made up or like it's
apparently
rooted in,
wait Jen,
is it rooted in something?
No, I just listened to a podcast, and I did not mean to, but it happened. The guest happened to be the person that made up the language for this movie.
So it's like made up?
Yeah, it's made up. I mean, it's from the movie. I mean, from the book, but it's not like a
real language.
No. They kind of had to make it up from scratch.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's kind of like, it does take you out of, not that I understand most languages spoken in the world, but like knowing that like it is a made up language, like when he's like yelling in a language that is like non-existent to this earth, like, you know, there is a little bit of like, this is kind of like stupid, but like, I don't know. I think acting is so hard because like I'd be like, I'm so embarrassed.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay. Let's go to the thing that I was referring to before. The last 15 to 20 minutes feels like not a different movie, but the speed is so breakneck. It's like so plot heavy. And the reason that I was like, I felt like I needed a seatbelt was because the first 2 hours, it moves at a brisk pace. Don't get me wrong. You know, like, I was just complimenting how we didn't need to see every detail of the journey, but it served like for the purpose of the story. I felt like the last 15, 20 minutes was like, oh my God, like, you know, they talk about going south like so much and how far it is and how inhospitable it is, right? How dangerous it is. And then it was like, okay, now we're going there and now we're there. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. I was like, whoa, you know, that was kind of like, what? Well, it seemed like you just drove down like I-95, you know, like you just went down like a few exits on the turnpike. Mm-hmm. After all this talk about like, yeah, we didn't even know that there were people there because we thought it was uninhabitable, you know. Yeah. And it's like, nope, just like any other temple down there, we all made it, you know. That's more like a nitpick, but it was something that I noticed because it's the last 15 minutes where all crescendos to like this duel between Austin Butler and Timothy Chalamet.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to remember if I felt that way.
It's essentially like once they start getting on like
it does move fast, but that's because I think the exposition and the world building and like raising Paul up to like battle, like whatever's to come is over, right? Like now shit is happening and it's happening really, really fast. So from like a storyline
really
perspective.
Fast.
Yeah. You know, like an hour into it, I was like, I think I need to pee. And then I thought about it for like the next hour and a half. And then by the time we got to the end, I forgot about it because I was so absorbed in like what was happening. So for me, like that ending or that like pace of it, like was really helpful.
Wait, but Jen, I went to the bathroom right before we walked in.
I know. And I think a lot of it was like psychological, like, oh, you're going to be in the seat for 3 hours. Like now I have to pee. And then I just didn't like, it was completely dark. So then I like was like, we were sitting not in the middle at all, but like I had two people next to me to get to the aisle. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I just didn't want to be that person. But then
we also, you know, the seats we were in were like reclining. So it's like, I felt like there was so much space between my feet and the.
Really? I don't know. I just was like, I think I would have to be like, hi, can you?
Oh, interesting. Oh, I wonder if it's because were they reclined all the way? Did they have their feet like all the way out? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, that's all. Go. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Those are the only things I didn't love about it. But I mean, in general, like I loved this movie. We keep talking about how we watched it again. I do want to watch it again. I kind of want to watch Dune 1 on like Max before watching Dune 2, like in theater again. If you haven't watched it and you're on the fence on it, go watch it.
I hope you didn't listen to this because we literally spoiled the whole thing. But
it's fine. Even if just go watch it, I promise you, you'll enjoy it. I promise you're not going to be like, this sucks, unless you're one of those people that like, because I do know some people where it's like they fall asleep in every movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, if you're like that, then like don't watch it. But everyone else, like, this movie's awesome. It's so good.
It was good.
The directing is good. The performances are good. The story is good. It's all good. Any other thoughts before we move on to Oscars?
No, we'll figure out a time. Maybe we can go watch it again as a like as the group that we watched, and we'll see how it is the second time.
Mm. All right, cool. All right, so Oscars, we're gonna run it back just like we did last year. We're gonna mix Jen's predictions versus the odds, and then we'll see how it stacks up. Okay, so we're gonna go. Let me bring up.
I think a lot of the stuff has been locked in.
The odds would say that you're right. So we'll talk about animated feature, both screenplays, supporting roles, leading roles, directing, and then best picture. Sound good?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, ready? Animated feature. What do you think is like the odds on favorite for that? And like, yeah, predict. Animated.
So this feature, has been
heavy or like a heavy favorite or slight favorite?
No. So I think if you had asked me this like 6 months ago, I would have been like Spider-Man all the way. If you had asked me like 3 months ago, 2 months ago, then I would have been like, oh, I think it's going to be The Boy and the Heron. But I think now it's back to Spider-Man. And so I would put my money on that if I had the theoretical money. But I don't think the odds are overwhelming here. I think it's just like a slight lead. Am I right?
You are correct. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse -225. The Boy and the Heron +135. I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's a favorite for sure, but it's not a heavy favorite compared to the other stuff we'll see. All right. Sounds good. Now, do you think there's any value in betting on The Boy and the Heron?
Yes.
Really? You think it actually has like a real chance?
Yeah, I do.
Wow. Okay.
I'm using the words we, but like for the most part, like Steve, when I bet, you bet or whatever, mm-hmm. like on this stuff, like but
yeah, yeah.
I think like overall we've decided that we're not betting this year, right?
Because I think so. I mean, I'm open to changing my mind about that, and you and I can talk about it. But if there's certain things you find value in, I'm 100% going to.
Yeah, I mean, I think I do see the value in The Boy and the Heron to upend or up whatever the Spider-Man, just because this is like Miyazaki's, like if not his last film, like as he has said, or like if not the last, then one of the last. But I think we'll be disappointed on Oscar night. So
okay, yeah. So then we'll stay away. Even though there clearly is value in it, the value isn't worth the risk. And so we're gonna stay away from this one. Let's go to adapted screenplay. What's your prediction?
Well, I think that this for me is the most volatile category.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So well, not in the whole of things, but in the ones that we're about to talk about. And I think we can just run through the ones we're about to talk about because like I think they're pretty much locked in. Adapted, okay. I think there's still room for other things to happen.
Who's the favorite right now?
I think the favorite right now is American Fiction, and that's what you're I correct. Would put my money down on. You know, not uh-huh. money, but like if you were doing a ballot or something.
But in terms of who's got a chance here? I'll tell you what the odds are.
I think number two would be Oppenheimer.
Yes, +200.
I would also think that because Barbie was written by Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach, like, mm-hmm. and because Barbie is probably not going to win anything in the like mm-hmm. major categories, minus like right. original song. If the voters were like, oh, but like it single-handedly, like it saved like cinema and like all this stuff, like this is where I can see the votes going. And I think even with American Fiction, it's not like this, like, oh my gosh, like, like all in voting, I just think it's just more favorable and it's picked up a couple of things leading to this. So that's why. But, you know, in my heart of hearts, I kind of would love to see a Greta Gerwig win for Barbie. But I think at the end of the day, it'll be American Fiction. If not, then like Oppenheimer.
Okay. Got it. Okay. All right. Makes sense. Let's go to original screenplay. I'll tell you this. The odds for original screenplay in terms of the favorite is the same as adapted screenplay, which was -250.
Yeah. So it's going to be most likely Anatomy of a Fall.
Yep.
I want to vote for my heart. And if I were to be like tempted to put money down on anything, I think Past Lives has a chance here.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing from your reaction that is not the number two. And if so, then I'm assuming it's the holdovers.
That is correct.
But I think Past Lives has just like continually, like since its like June release, I want to say, has just kept up this pace. And while I was disappointed in like it not keeping up the momentum, and especially like, I mean, Greta Lee, like I felt like could have been a contention for like actress in a leading role, like for a small movie that could, like it has been cutting for like months now. So that is what I would vote with my heart, and I think a lot of Academy voters would feel the same way. But Anatomy of a Fall has such a chokehold on a lot of things right now, and this is one of those categories.
Do you actually think there's value in Anatomy of a Fall, because it has the same odds as American Fiction, and it seems like in your estimation Anatomy of a Fall actually has it way more locked up than American Fiction in the screenplay categories?
I think it does, but I mean, I honestly, I do think that like the holdovers, it's interesting to me because I think a lot of people just think like a lot of people really liked it, but a lot of people also are like, oh, it's fine. And like it has like best supporting actress locked up, and like that's what it has always been. And so for it to be this like, oh, it's the second place contender, like I don't necessarily think that makes a ton of sense. Like for me, I think just from the buzz and just like the way that it's been talked about this whole season, I would think it's a more close race between Anatomy of a Fall and Past Lives. So like if you're saying that like the betting odds and stuff like holdovers is number two, then it confirms for me that it's going to be Anatomy of a Fall.
I gotcha.
And I think the Oppenheimer train is just really, really, really like, it's hard to ignore. And so that's why I'm a little bit hesitant about, if you were going to like ask me like what I think has a better chance, like I still think Anatomy of a Fall has a better chance in its category than American Fiction does because of the Oppenheimer thing.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. Let's go to supporting performances. Ready?
Yeah.
RDJ. How locked is RDJ for supporting actor?
RDJ is practicing his speech right now.
Wow. So it's locked in.
Yeah.
Locked in.
Yeah. Wow. This not is not even... like the supporting roles are not fun right now. Like it's not fun right anymore.
So, question.
There's no room. Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's like any chance for Gosling?
I think there is always a chance, but I think Robert Downey Jr. has just won too many things for Ryan Gosling.
And he's handling the wins in like the perfect way, saying all the right things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although his last SAG speech I felt was a little bit just like, I don't know the word for it. And I was like, dude, like the race isn't over yet. You need to continually like charm people. But I don't think so, honestly. And also it's really, really hard to justify, I'm not saying this, but like a Barbie like win, like the role does not seem serious right. enough for this sure, kind sure, of thing, sure. even though I think he's actually so good as
you know, when I watched it, I was like, good in this, like mm-hmm. really good.
Yeah. Did you feel that way about RDJ?
No.
Me neither.
No. You know, I know. I he was good, but I wasn't like, whoa. You know.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, he's good.
No, we won't see. He's gonna win, but yeah.
It's a deserving win. I'll say that. Like, it's not gonna be a travesty, but with Gosling, I was like, oh man, this is really good. With RDJ, I was like, oh, it's good. You know. Okay.
I want to say that the odds for Divine Joy Randolph and the holdovers for actress in a supporting role is like, however way you would frame that, like phrase it. I don't know, Steve. You've been talking to me about this forever, and I still don't know how to say it. But like, I think that is like higher than any other. Like a shoo-in. She's like, really? She's been locked in. There's been a little bit of like tug and pull and movement in other categories, but like. She has just been locked in this entire time. And, like, it's hers to lose. Like, literally, out of every other, like, category here, if she doesn't win, that would be, like, the biggest upset.
Okay, interesting. Because she has the same odds as RDJ.
But that's, like, crazy.
So you think she's...
No, I think that's not crazy. No, what I mean is they're both in the... they're both leading in their categories. Yeah. But I think by the same amount. if you were to ask me, like, you asked me about the screenplays, like 1,000%, I would put my money in on the holdovers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. She's very clearly number one. It's not even close.
Everybody is just like, we're so thankful to be here, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Emily Blunt has no chance.
No chance.
Wow. Okay.
It is. I mean, she's really good in it, but like, it's been widely just. Discuss that, like, that's it's really not her movie, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, that's
she
true.
Doesn't get a lot to do other than be like the jolted, like, upset wife, you know?
Sure. Okay, yeah. Okay. All right, then now we're gonna move on to lead.
Let's do actor first,
yeah, because it's gonna be Cillian Murphy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm
does
assuming
Giamatti
Paul
have
Giamatti.
Any chance? Yeah.
No, he does. He definitely does.
Really? Really? Even now?
Mm-hmm. I actually wouldn't be surprised if Paul Giamatti wins, but I think at this point, I think that happening is getting slimmer by the day, / it's already over, like the voting has ended. So, I think it's definitely Cillian Murphy's, but like... If by any chance, it wouldn't be like the biggest upset. You know what I mean? Because they have been neck and neck.
So it'd be up until how long ago were they neck and neck, would you say?
I think I want to say up until the SAG Awards 2 weeks ago.
Interesting. Do you think there's any value? Okay, so Cillian Murphy is minus 1,200, which is like, it's
don't
not really.
Don't even bother. Yeah.
Yeah. But Paul Giamatti is plus 550, which means like, you know, if you bet $100, you get back $650 in return.
I just wouldn't do it. This is why I don't gamble.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, it's probably going to be Cillian Murphy. Yeah. It's probably going to be Cillian Murphy. Yeah. Okay, ready? Every year you and I spend the most time talking about best actress. Who do you think? Let me frame it this way. Two-woman race? Would you agree?
Yes.
Gladstone and Stone. Oh, interesting. I didn't even realize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they call themselves like the Stone Sisters or something.
Who do you think is in the lead right now?
Right now, I think it's Lily Gladstone.
Yes, she is the favorite at like minus 250.
Yeah.
Emma Stone is plus 165.
Yeah.
Is this a coin flip, Jen?
Yeah, 1,000%.
If it's truly 50-50, is there value in betting Emma Stone here, even though she's only plus 165, which means like you bet 100, you get 265 back?
Yeah, I think so. That's the only one that I'll be like, yeah, I think there's value there.
Oh my God. Is that what we're
doing?
You're gonna
do it? No, because I honestly think we're going to lose money.
So while you think statistically this is like a coin flip 50-50, you are more confident in Lily Gladstone winning? Interesting.
Like the tide has
Interesting.
shifted. Especially after SAG. I mean, like winning the Screen Actors Guild Award, like not cements your status, but it's a huge part of the voting block. And also,
Yeah.
it coincides in the middle of like voting. And so like that can sometimes just, flip people one way or another. And I think people do look at the fact that like, Emma Stone actually like she has already won. Again, these are not like just because you've already won, you can't like, come back later
Right.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like she's under 35. She's a white woman with lots of opportunities who like steadily works and like steadily is recognized for like her work. And she's already won an Oscar. I think that when you factor in some of that stuff, in addition to the actual performance, because I don't know if you watch Poor Things, it's now on Disney Plus, which I think is so funny because it is definitely like it's not NC-17, but it's not a
Sure.
G-rated movie. But like she's so good in this role, and like it's such a singular role because it literally she like goes from like having the mental capacity of like a 1-year-old baby to like being like like a 20-something year old woman in the span of the movie, and it just is unlike any performance I think like here because like it's such a fantastical like it's just like a unique unicorn of a performance. And any other year, I think she would have had it in the bag. But like, I just really feel like Hollywood is constantly tripping over them. And look, again, I'm not saying this to be like she doesn't deserve it because I think Lily Gladstone is the best part of Killers of the Flower Moon. But like, there is a little bit of like the retribution, like, we are going to really look at the way that things have been, and we should be amplifying and highlighting people of color and all of that stuff. So all of that does play into voting, again, not so much of a contention, like not so much of a conversation if like she's not good in it. She's really, really good in it, but like it's paid off. And like you watch Flowers, right? Like she's like a supporting actress. So like the fact that she
Yeah.
took this gamble and like not she, I think it's her team, but like they put her up in this I don't know if I could tell you that like if it was between Lily Gladstone and Divine Joy Randolph, like she wouldn't be enjoying this amount of like I've got this in the back kind of thing. So I think they were really, really smart about it and it's paying off. But if you had asked me 2 months ago, I actually would have not been so sure.
Yeah.
So again, it could be a coin flip because Emma Stone has, and like if you look at like literally every award leading up to now, like they have literally taken turns winning things. So it's been neck and neck, but yeah, I don't know. If you want to gamble, yeah, put your money down on Emma Stone because I think there's value there. But I think at the end of the night, it's gonna go to Lily.
Okay. Is there now the next two categories actually are the most expensive odds. So more than supporting actors. Is there any chance Nolan loses director, or any chance Oppenheimer loses Best Picture? And normally I wouldn't phrase it this way. Every year I kind of let you do your predictions, but I think anyone who's been paying any attention knows that, like that's like the heavy favorite. Is there any chance of anything or anyone else winning those two categories?
No.
Interesting.
Like maybe Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, and that's like the same like neck and neck kind of thing, but I can't think of another best picture that currently has what Oppenheimer has.
Yeah.
I think unfortunately Killers of the Flower Moon has like stopped being in conversation a long time ago.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper, I'm sorry that you like literally spent so much of your life like making this movie that like people really aren't they're not resonating with and like not really caring about. And then like Barbie, as much as, you know, like I think you can argue for it, like in terms of saving the box office and all that stuff, but like people aren't people at the end of the day will always be like, it's a movie about a fucking doll, you know? And so, you know, I really can't think of a movie in this category that it could go to other than Oppenheimer. Have you heard about The Zone of Interest?
I've heard about it just in terms of like, it has no chance of winning. That's really all I've heard about it.
I think it's supposed to be so good. And I
purposely
didn't watch it in theaters because I was like, I think I would be too freaked out, but it's about like the Holocaust and, but in a different, like, it's not about like concentration camps or anything like that. It's like, it's about the people who are like the bad people, you know, but they're living their lives. And like, even though they're doing terrible things, like, you still have a life to live, and you're like, you know, you have a family, you go home too, and all this stuff. And like, it's, I think, like, I mean, my coworker who watched it was just like, oh my gosh, it's like so tense the entire time. And, you know, I think that it's gotten such like favorable, like reviews, and it kind of came out of not nowhere, but like people weren't expecting it to make it into Best Picture and directing. I actually think like, not that a nomination takes away from another nomination, but like in its Jonathan Glazer, who's the director of The Zone of Interest, like in its place, like, you know, a lot of people are just like, oh, that should have been like Greta Gerwig or like whatever. But in terms of like what an Oscar movie tends to be, like, I think maybe it has that gravitas and what Oscar voters, like traditional Oscar voters, could go for. But like, honestly, like, I don't know, Steve, like, do you think anything has a chance?
God, no, I don't. I think we're probably going to see that rare territory of, I'm trying to remember the last time this happened, but the same movie winning Best Picture, Best Director, and like Best Actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, and it doesn't have to be actor, it could be actress, but one of the leads, you know, where it's like Best Picture, Best Director, and then one of the leads, like,
yeah,
I'm trying to remember the last time something like that happened. I can't think of one.
Yeah,
I think it's in the bag. The only Emma Stone definitely has a chance. I don't know why I'm like, maybe if there was a stronger grouping for the supporting actor category, I think RDJ would not be this locked in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this year, a lot of things are just locked in.
Yeah. And like, it's made it kind of like not as fun for me in a lot of ways.
Oh, interesting.
And not that, like, I mean, I think we have this conversation most years, like most, like by this time, like things are pretty much locked in for a lot of categories, but mm-hmm. like this year, I don't know why, like, it just feels like it just feels like every single thing is like predictable. And so maybe there will be a little bit of an upset and unpredictable thing that happens, but I honestly don't think so. And you know, like, I think this is the first year in like 2 years or whatever that we're not like putting any money down for anything. Like, did we put money down last year? Maybe we didn't.
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, and like, I honestly also just, I think my heart is just like sad because like there are things that I really, really wanted happening, you know? And it goes beyond like the actual nominees. Like, I thought Charles Melton was gonna win the Oscar, you know? And like, he wasn't even nominated. So like, it's like stuff like that. Like, I'm perpetually disappointed anytime Greta Gerwig is like not nominated for Best Director.
Yeah.
And
that,
like,
I think,
frankly,
that's crazy that she wasn't.
It's so crazy. And frankly, like, I actually, like, I'm like mad about Margot Robbie. Like, that movie hinges on, I don't care what anyone says, like, that movie hinges on her ability to sell Barbie as this like living, breathing, like, being, who's grappling with like the existence of life, and she does it in a way that like that could have been. It's just like, such a hard line to toe. Like you're literally talking about like Barbies, you know, like. And so I don't know. I guess I just because like so many things that I like wanted to see didn't happen too. That like I don't know. I think I'm like less excited about this year than like I've been in previous years. Like I will like you know like when you like when every year when the NBA finals run rolls around or the Super Bowl runs rolls around, like I'm assuming like your level of excitement as much as you love those things like does also like vary and depend on like whether you like the teams or like you're rooting for people, right? So like I think it's a little bit of that. Like I still love this and this is my Super Bowl, but it's like meh, it's fine.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is in comparison to like sports, let's say, right? I think for a lot of people, it's like I'm in sports. I don't like knowing what is probably going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Oscars, I feel like I'm going to tune in because I want to know what some of these acceptance speeches are going to be because I do know. I feel like I do know who's going to win. I don't know. It's bizarre. Even though it's live, it's not a competition. Even though it is a competition, I don't know. So, yeah, I would say, you know, the thing you and I need to talk about most would probably be Emma Stone. Out of all of them, right?
Actually, though, Steve, if I take it back, if there's a Best Picture winner here that's not Oppenheimer, it'll probably be Poor Things.
Poor Things is plus 2,000. If you bet $100, you'd get $2,100 back.
Should I bet on Poor Things?
Let's talk about Poor Things after.
Should we bet like $50 each so it doesn't feel like that like upsetting when we inevitably lose?
Yeah, let's just talk about it. Let's just talk about it afterwards. Poor Things plus 2,000.
Okay.
Let me see if yeah, that's the one. Okay. All right. Should we move on to obsessions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm gonna go first because I sent you mine. And you alluded to why I was being so dramatic in our opening. My obsession has been, there's this TV personality, his name is Stephen A. Smith on ESPN.
I'm telling you, he gets compared to Ludacris.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Okay. And he's really dramatic. He can be kind of clickbaity. You asked me if I am like a fan of his, and I said, not really. Because his job is not to have in-depth knowledge. His job is to be able to speak about anything and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so there aren't enough hours in the day to deep dive into all the things that he has to be able to talk about because he talks about any and all sports, right? Mm-hmm. But there's this thing that he does on his show now where people can submit questions for him to answer and they'll submit really silly questions and he will answer them with as much enthusiasm and seriousness and drama as he would anything else he's talking about, like when it comes to sports. So like one of the questions,
you know, when you first said that to me, I thought he was answering questions on Twitter, but like they're literally giving him airtime.
Yeah.
To do this.
No, I don't, like, he's doing it on his show. So one of the questions was like, who would win in a fight, Stuart Little or is it Remy? Yeah, Remy from Ratatouille. And he clearly has never seen Ratatouille because he, first of all, doesn't call him by his name. He calls him Ratatouille, but then mm-hmm. he also can't pronounce it or doesn't know how to pronounce it. So he keeps calling him Ratatouille. He's like pronouncing the L's, doesn't know it's French. And he talks, he like really compares it to like two boxers fighting and like really goes in on the in-depth in terms of the analysis, and it's so hilarious
mm-hmm.
to me. And it's just it reminds me of, you know, when my friends and I would have these hypothetical arguments and we would get really like passionate about it, about like, oh, who would win a fight, a bear or like a tiger, you know? And it's like you'd never see that,
just like silly conversations that you would have with your friends over nothing.
And it's so funny. It is so funny. But yeah, so that's my obsession. Every time it comes out, I get so happy. He does it maybe like once a week, once every other week, something like that, where he does funny stuff like that. I find it hilarious. What about you? What's your obsession?
Mine's also just internet content. I mean, I'm calling it internet content because you sent it to me as a piece of like internet content, even though I know it's on air. But I love dog content, as you know. And you know, you're a new dog dad, and so you know, we've talked a lot about having dogs or whatever. But do you know We Rate Dogs?
No, what is We Rate Dogs?
We Rate Dogs is like, I mean, he's on Instagram, he's on TikTok, but like, we'll post like dog submissions, so photos, videos, and then we'll be like, oh, 14 out of 10. Like, no one is ever like below 10 out of 10. Like, he's always like, it's like run by this like 20 year old kid, like, who really loves dogs. And then like, they have merch that says like, tell your dog I said hi. So they're like stickers and like t-shirts. And then they use money from that merch to like support like specific dogs who are like in need of like medical treatment or whatever.
Oh,
but
that's so sweet.
It is really sweet. It's great. He actually just did a video with Jennifer Garner and her dog. So they're like dog walking her dog Birdie while they're like talking about like, you know, her, like, it's an interview, but basically like, they're walking the dog that she has. But he specifically does, or We Rate Dogs, like, in addition to giving me like, I don't think it's daily content, but like pretty regular content of like just random dogs. Like, the other day I posted a story on my Instagram where it was a dog named Sophie who was like posed like so wildly. Like, he was just like laying on the couch, but like the caption was like, this is Sophie, like, she appreciates that you want to go and like do things, but like, that's not her like vibe. Like, she wishes you luck or whatever. Like, I was just like, this is my life. Like, I want this. I want to live this lifestyle. So in addition to that, like at the end of every week, they'll do like top five dogs of the week. And it's always like, I mean, like, I have cried so many times watching these, you know. I'll literally send it to you. It's like the dog who like ran away, but then like 5 years later made their way back to like,
oh my God, their,
like, stuff like that. I'm always just like, I love dogs so much. And so that's what I'm into. And because of this, like, my Instagram and my TikTok, like, and my Reels and Facebook, like, the suggested for me content is either the soccer player that I'm really into or just about dogs. I know so much about dog rearing because, like, I literally just get videos of like five ways to like get your dog to do this. Like, I'm just like, I don't know why this is being served to me at this moment in my life, but you know what? That's, I'll so take
funny.
It.
That's so
but
funny.
I will send it to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Please send it to me. I love dog content now. Mm-hmm. I love dog content. Okay. So yeah, check those out. Stephen A. Smith and We Rate Dogs. Watch Dune and then watch the Oscars. On Sunday night. Yep. Remember to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, Steve, also, yeah, shout out to our 99th episode. We're almost at 100, guys.
Almost at 100. One more episode. We've been brainstorming on what we're going to do for 100th episode. So be on the lookout for that. Remember to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you're listening, remember to rate and subscribe. Jen, you want to say bye?
Bye, everybody.